Hey there, I'm so pumped to tell you about an amazing new community I've launched called Grief to Growth Circle Community. It's a space for people who are grieving to come together to support each other and for people who want to know who we are, why we're here, and where we're going to have those conversations, all the things we talk about on the podcast. So I invite you to join me at grieftogrowth.com/community to become part of this compassionate crew. The best part is 100% free. And you have access to me in addition to everybody else in the community. In fact, the podcast will be there so you can talk about the things we talk about in the podcast right there in the community. There's also some premium content if you want to go deeper in the work I'm doing, but mostly it's about building relationships and community and about sharing resources and supporting each other. So come on over and check it out. It's grieftogrowth.com/community. I'll see you inside.
Hi there. Before we start, Brian would like to share a couple of things with you. First, did you know that Brian is a life coach, a grief guide, and a mental fitness trainer? Brian would love to help you with whatever life issues are challenging you. Brian has years of experience as well as training. You can contact Brian at www.grieftogrowth.com to learn more. Brian is the author of the best-selling book, Grief to Growth, Planted, Not Buried, which you can get on Amazon or Brian's website. This is a great book if you're in grief or to give to someone you know who is dealing with grief. Lastly, Brian creates free and paid resources for your growth. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/gifts. www.grieftogrowth.com to sign up for his newsletter. Choose a gift just for signing up and keep up with what Brian is offering. And now, here's today's episode. Please enjoy.
Hi, everybody. This is Brian Smith with Grief to Growth, and I'm back with my guest today, Lisa Jones. And Lisa has a fascinating tale to tell of her experiences with the other world. So I'm going to at least let Lisa tell her story, but I'm going to read a short introduction, and then I'll bring her in and we'll talk as we always do. If you want to go back, Lisa has been on the program once before. I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to go back and watch your previous interview. After a transformative shared death experience, she began communicating with the collective energy known as the Beings of Love and Light, otherwise known as Belau. She shares this loving, calm energy with humanity to help them navigate the ever-changing challenges of life, living life on Earth. She's the author of The Art of Living Happy After the Loss of a Loved One. She's an inspirational speaker. She's an intuitive guide and a consultant for top-level performers in global business, high-profile celebrities, and individuals alike. Her life-changing meditations, podcasts, and stage shows reach and teach the powerful potential of spirit, abundance, and the key to true inner happiness. And I've talked to Lisa before we got started here, and I know she's got some fascinating stories to tell us today. So with that, I want to bring in Lisa Jones.
Hey, Brian. It's so great to see you again. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you back, Lisa. I know you when you were here before, we talked about your shared death experience, and so maybe we can start there and tell people about that. And tell what a shared death experience is, because a lot of people don't know.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to share. And, you know, back when this happened to me, I didn't know what it was. And I don't even think we had, you know, our society knew much about it. But now they're actually studying shared death experiences at the University of California in Santa Barbara. And so it's been fascinating working with their team and sharing my multiple shared death experiences now. But 18 years ago, on February 22nd, 2004, my first husband, he had been sick with cancer for 7 years, and he ended up transitioning on that night. And just before he took his last breath, I had been with him. I had been his caregiver for 7 years, and I had kissed him on the forehead, and I went to my daughter's room because his brother and best friend had come to our house, and my kids actually were out of the house that night. And so it was really the first time I had a moment just to be in my own, well, I was in my daughter's room, but just have a little space. And I prayed to God and just said, you know, please help us. Hospice was here today, and they said that it's going to be another couple of weeks before he takes his last breath, but I'm just, you know, I need help. I need strength. And I fell asleep. But the next thing I know, my soul just came out of my body, and I was escorted with two angels, and I went to the place that I would call heaven. I mean, it was the most beautiful, pristine. I mean, every time I think about it, my whole body is chilling right now, because when I think of it, it just brings me right back there. But it was For me, it was like a castle-like experience. We kind of landed in a field of rolling hills, but you could see the castle. And then next thing you know, we were in it. And everything was so clean. And that was the one of the things that was so outstanding to it, is it was just pristine cleanliness and just the spotlessness of the whole experience was palpable. Mm-hmm. But then they escorted me down a hallway and to this, it was kind of a balcony that we looked down on this area where all of these souls were gathering together. And then there was an announcement, and it kind of chokes me up because, again, it takes me right back there. But it says, "The grand Mr. Ian Sharp is about to arrive." And that was my husband, Ian Sharp. And so all of these souls were coming together, and they were all kind of talking amongst themselves, and just the excitement and the, you know, the amazement of this soul coming back home was palpable in the room. And so then all of a sudden, this door just started to open. It was almost like this, you know, you could hear this giant, really thick wall of a door start to open. And right at that moment, I saw a foot step forward, and all of a sudden, knock, 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 Lisa, wake up, wake up. Ian just took his last breath. And it was his brother knocking on my daughter's room door where I was asleep. And right at that moment, as everyone started cheering up in heaven that he had arrived, it was like a trap door just fell open, and I just landed back in my body. And so the knocking at the door woke me up, and I was so startled because, I mean, here I was in this beautiful place seeing my husband being welcomed to heaven. And then here I was in my daughter's room and being told that he took his last breath. And I was so in confusion because at that point I was 37. I still had three living grandparents. I really had not experienced death in my life. And so I didn't know what it would feel like when he finally died. And then I was like so filled with joy and excitement and love. And I mean, the unconditional love I felt there was, again, just the most pervasive feeling being up there. So I was confused, and I ran down to see, and it was just his body laying in our bed. And I was like, wow, he's not here. I could just tell so clearly. But it just gave me just the calm and the peace and the knowing that he was okay. And the crazy part was, I was very religious at that point, and I was raised to believe that if you weren't baptized, you would go to hell. And so that was one of my biggest worries, is he hadn't been baptized. So I thought, oh my God, you know, he's going to spend life and eternity in hell. And so the relief and the comfort that I gained on that evening it just shattered my whole belief system, which then, I mean, this last 18 years has been continuing to unfold in many ways. And then that morning, before I went to tell the children, like after he had passed, I had to call the mortuary. And so they came and got his body. And then I had taken a shower and was blow drying my hair and thinking about what was I going to say to the kids. And all of a sudden, Ian's voice was right in my ear. And he just said, "Oh my God, Lisa, I love you, but it's so awesome here." Mm-hmm. And just that knowing, that was like my final, you know, dot on the I, that I knew that he had actually gone where I had witnessed, you know, him being welcomed to. And ever since then, 18 years, he pops up. He just helped me find this new place that I'm living in Maui. And I mean, that's another fabulous story that I'm happy to share, but that's basically how this all started for me. Prior to that, I was an accountant. I was a CPA for Pricewaterhouse in San Francisco. And then we moved to DC and I worked for Ernst & Young. And I was basically a bean counter living just a very 3D life. And, I had no idea all this amazing, extraordinary events that can happen in the spiritual world that we live in.
So I'm curious about what your thoughts were about this shared death experience, because again, it's something that you said you didn't know about and a lot of people don't know. So what did you think it happened?
Well, it was so interesting because, again, I didn't really understand the ramifications of it at the time. I mean, it was something I experienced. I didn't tell a lot of people because, frankly, it felt so kind of beyond belief, you know, and a lot of people are like, well, yeah, but weren't you asleep? Weren't you just dreaming? And I guess for me, I'll say the difference is the minute I start talking about it, I'm right there. It's not like a dream I had. I mean, I had dreams this morning. I was just thinking about before we started today, and I'm like, I can't even remember what the dream was. But this situation, this experience, this shared death experience is so, I can just pull it up and it's the crystal clarity of the experience of it. And so now that they've been studying it, apparently there's multiple ways that we can have shared death experiences, whether it's actually accompanying the person up to a certain point as they transition. I know a couple of my friends have like been with their mothers where they're holding their hand and then they see them in a field, you know, but then the mother says, I have to go from here. And then they release hands and they walk over the hill. So there's ways of seeing signs, you know, like premonitions of prior death, and then, signs afterwards that they come to see you. Like that's what happened with my mom, who died 10 years after my husband. Is I was visiting her. She was in Kauai and I was living in Connecticut at the time. So as I was leaving her, I was walking out to my rental car, and it's like I walked through a threshold. It just an invisible threshold. But all of a sudden I hear, you're going to be back in a week and something will have happened to your mother. And I'm like, what? Who? Like, it was clear as a bell. It's not like I heard words. It was just this all of a sudden knowing. Mm-hmm. And I just went on. I didn't even say anything to my mom because I was like, that was really weird. And I reject that. I don't accept that. Well, a week later, exactly, I got a phone call from my stepdad and he's like, oh my God, Lisa, your mom had a stroke. You need to come back. And so I was a week later, exactly back, walking back into that place where I had, you know, pulled my suitcase out earlier. Mm-hmm. And ultimately she died 5 days later, but she also came to me the night I got the phone call. I had to repack my bags to fly back there. And I laid down for just a little bit. And all of a sudden her energy just washed over me. And she said, you told me that we'd be able to communicate when I went to the other side. Here I am. And I thought she had actually died, but she was just out of her body. And she had gone to my brother that night too. And then when I flew, I didn't even want to talk to my stepdad. I thought, oh my God, if she died last night, I don't want to know. I just want to get to Kauai, and cause I was flying in from New York. Mm-hmm. And, but as soon as I got to the hospital, she sat up, looked me in the eye, and then she was unconscious for another 5 days or 4 days before she passed. But that was an interesting thing too, to realize that people that are in their bodies can still, you know, their souls are mobile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they can move around and visit and talk to you. And yeah, it's been fascinating.
So you were saying that since Ian's passing that many years ago, that he's come to you, and it sounds like even recently helping you.
Yes.
Helping you.
Yes. Well, even so recently in February, I've been living in my place here in Maui for just over 2 years. And then on February 15th, I got an email from my landlord saying, we're going to increase your rent $600. And I just was like, what? And I had a little dog that was close to the end, and it's really hard to find a place here on Maui right now. And especially with a dog, like nobody will rent to people with dogs. So I was beside myself. I literally thought I was having a heart attack. I've since realized it was a panic attack, but I'm like, okay, if I'm dying, I'm going to the beach. Like I just was propelled down to the beach, and I ended up meeting this really lovely lady. I'd never met her before. And we connected and I was practically in tears, and she was commenting on my dog. And I said, oh my God, I need to find a new place to live. I don't know what I'm going to do. And she said, oh, my neighbor just found out that their person is leaving the island. Let me introduce you to them. So then, a couple days later, it was actually on February 22nd, my husband's death date, I met the people that that were, you know, renting this place, and they had never allowed a dog before, but they met Tuxedo and they just said, oh my God, he's adorable. We'd be happy to have him. And then we were just chatting and they said, you know, well, tell us a little bit about you. I said, well, I used to work at Price Waterhouse in San Francisco. And they said, oh, do you know so-and-so? And I said, oh my God. Yes. Not only do I know him, I worked with him, but he was my late husband's roommate 30 years ago for the 2 years that we dated in San Francisco. And I mean, if that isn't like somebody guiding me, I mean, I didn't hear about this place through a newspaper, through, you know, an ad or anything, the normal ways that you find housing. It was literally going to the beach, running into a woman who I'd never met before, and then landing in a place who work or who their investment advisor is my late husband's roommate.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and he was at my wedding. I mean, their investment advisor was at my wedding 30 years ago with Ian. So again, it's like, what?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, something I want to tell you about today. My podcast platform, Buzzsprout, has recently made it easier for me to allow you to support me financially. Go to www.grieftogrowth.com/subscribe. That's grief2growth.com/subscribe. And once you're there, you can sign up to support me financially. Now, you can do it for as little as $3 a month or, of course, as much as you'd like. If you do that, you'll get access to bonus episodes, and you'll see those in the regular feed. They'll have a lock on them. But when you become a subscriber, you'll actually get access to your own private feed, and you'll be able to listen to the regular podcast along with the bonus podcast for the subscribers. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for sharing the podcast. And I want to thank those of you who support me financially. Have a great day, and on to the episode. Yeah, you know, it's amazing that how these synchronicities, they seem to happen more, I think, once we recognize that they happen.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh, I know the synchronicities just go on and on. And I mean, that to me is one of the more memorable ones as far as, you know, something that, you know, from 30 years ago. And so, you know, they called my, our mutual friend to verify that I had worked, and he's like, oh my God, Lisa. Yeah. I mean, he was my investment advisor after my husband died. So, you know, and it's been a great, I just feel so blessed to be here and to feel like I'd been, you know, my husband's like looking out for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's cool because I think it lets us know, because sometimes people wonder when our loved ones cross the other side, do they lose interest in us? Do they lose interest in things of the earth? Do they become like little balls of light and they don't care about us anymore?
Yeah, I have not felt that at all. I mean, my mom comes to me as a cardinal, red cardinal. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she'll float around here. Because generally when I speak of that, all of a sudden a red cardinal appears. I really do believe that we can continue a relationship with our loved ones, you know, after they cross, but you have to be, number one, open to the idea. Number two, willing to accept what we can't see. You know, so many people ask me, well, do you think that was a sign that this and this and this happened? I'm like, if you think it's a sign, you know? And I remember helping, I was adopted and my birth mother had lost, one of her kids in a car accident. And so I've channeled for her over the years. And one of the things I said to her is, you know, if you believe it's a sign or you think it's a sign, believe it, because it's hard for them to manipulate our physical world in order to for us to get those signs. And so if we don't believe, if we're always questioning or dismissing or, oh, that couldn't be, well, then I think they do kind of, I don't want to say they lose interest, but I think they lose heart. And why go to all that effort if they're not going to accept my, you know, this really intense, I mean, I don't know how hard it is for them to do the signs, but I think it takes some effort, you know, it's not like, you know,
yeah, I from what I understand, it does take some effort. Some people are better at it than others. I think it's a skill that they have to learn. And but there's a certain amount of effort involved in it. So, you know, we should appreciate it, you know,
Absolutely. Say
thank you like you would if somebody here does something for you.
That's right.
And if someone keeps doing things for you and you never say thank you, eventually you're kind of like, well, maybe I don't want to do that so much anymore.
Absolutely. In fact, that just reminds me, I showed you earlier, hopefully you can see that, but there's a black and white feather. So my little puppy dog, he transitioned on June 19th and his name was Tuxedo. So I'm telling you, this little puppy dog has been one of the most potent, energetic connections that I've experienced. I mean, even with my loved ones, you know, my people spirits, but, first of all, the night that he passed, I was just kind of in that twilight, just falling asleep, you know, kind of awake. But all of a sudden, this just giant wave of energy just came right to me. And it was the most loving, pristine, again, clean. It was like being in that heavenly space, but it was totally him. And he's just like, you know, I love you so much, you know, and it just completely pierced my heart, you know, wide open. And then I've been getting these black and white feathers wherever I go, like on, you know, like I'm walking now much more. I mean, again, he had gotten to where I had to carry him everywhere. And so I've been walking our new neighborhood, which I hadn't done since we moved in here. Mm-hmm. And every 100 yards or so, there was a black and white feather right on my footsteps. I mean, it was just like, you couldn't, I'm like, I've never seen so many feathers on a, you know, mile walk or whatever. And then today I went to go get some papayas and bananas, which is what I have every morning for breakfast. And when I went to go put them in my car, right on the passenger side door where he would sit and wait for me when I'd go and run in there to get the papayas and bananas, mm-hmm. that little black and white, you know, feather was there. And it just was, oh my gosh, so heartwarming.
That's pretty wild. You know, it's pretty,
it is.
So and you were talking about how, you know, how Tuxedo comes to you also. Now I'm curious, was there your experience with Ian? Was that the first experience you had like that where you were communicating with the other side? Do you think that is what opened you up?
I really do. I mean, it's interesting because now, of course, looking back in time, I mean, as a child, I was getting a lot of signs and things that were happening, but I just never could quite, I didn't understand them. Like I used to see cowboys and Indians outside my window at night, and I would, you know, run into my mom's room and be like, oh my gosh. And she would just dismiss it as, you know, childhood imagination. But I really now believe that these were spirits that were coming to me, but I just I didn't have the support to even understand or put it into some kind of context other than my mother just dismissing it. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that's been interesting is like throughout my life, I would just tell the truth and not knowingly telling the truth. I mean, this one's kind of, it could be triggering for people, but my minister ended up having sex with the girls in our confirmation class. Like he would target us one at a time. And I remember him taking me down to the basement one night and he was just acting so weird. And I just intuitively was like, let me out of here. And so I left. But then later that year, we went to the Lutheran Youth Convention down in San Antonio, Texas. And so we had a whole busload of kids and we went down and he had rented an extra hotel room. And so we were down on the boardwalk down there, or whatever they call it, the river walk. And my best friend and Pastor Peter were not with us. And somebody's like, where are they? I said, oh, they're up in that extra hotel room having sex, like completely thinking I was being funny. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly what was happening. And it was later. I mean, my girlfriend told me later that that's what had happened. And then he ultimately was dismissed from the church because he had admitted to all of this. And I guess he had done it at a prior church and they passed him on to our church. So, but I've got multiple things like that, again, growing up that I didn't even know I was telling the truth or, you know, things just come out of me. In fact, when I did start doing this work, I was invited to a radio show, Star 99.9, just outside New York City. Mm-hmm. And so I was meeting with the DJs and he's like, well, how does this work? You know, I'm pretty skeptical. And I said, I don't know. It's not like I just walk up to you and say, so what's going on with your mom's heart? You know, she obviously needs to get that checked out. And he's like, his eyes got like as big as saucers. And he's like, she's at the hospital right now getting her heart checked out. I was like, whoa, mm-hmm. I didn't even know it worked like that. Like I mean, so that's what's so been really fascinating is even though I feel like Ian's that night, I always call it a divine dispensation. I feel like they gave that to me as a gift to know that he was going to be okay because I was so concerned that he was going to be going to hell that it really allowed me to move forward. And my kids were only 8 and 10 when he died. So I think had I believed that he had gone to hell, I think I don't know if I could have ever gotten out of that depression.
Yeah. You know, I just want to interject this really quickly because before we started recording, I this is late in the afternoon for me. We started scoring about 5 o'clock and we were talking about getting ready for the recording. And you said to me, there's probably not much you have to do. You probably just like wash your face and brush your teeth or something. Well, I don't think I've ever washed my face before I've done a podcast before, but I did today.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi there. I'm really excited to tell you about my latest ebook. It's 4 lessons that you can learn from the near-death experience without going through all the trouble of dying to learn them. I've been studying NDEs for several years now. I am completely convinced that not only are they 100% real, but that there's some very universal wisdom that we can get from the near-death experience. And I've distilled that down in this book into 4 short lessons. And I've also given you all the reasons why I believe the NDEs are absolutely real. So go to www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons to pick it up for free. www.grieftogrowth.com/NDE lessons. I hope you enjoy it.
That is crazy. See, that's the kind of stuff that I don't even know that I'm right, because I mean, had you not told me that right now, I wouldn't even know that. So thank you for the validation.
I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've ever done that, but it's, like I said, it's kind of late in the day and I'm like, I need to kind of freshen up. So I have 2 minutes. I'm going to go upstairs and wash my face before I do the podcast.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. Yeah. Cause I was commenting. I'm like, you know, guys have it so easy. I mean, what'd you do? Wash your face and get ready to go. And meanwhile, here I am like putting my eye makeup on. So there you go. There's another one of those. Just, it comes out of me and I don't, it's so easy. It's not even like, I mean, it's just what comes out of me. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think we're all a lot more connected in ways than we know. And again, I think once you start to open up, it just starts to kind of flow through.
Yeah, it's like an avalanche.
But you mentioned something, you know, about Ian and your spiritual beliefs. So I'm curious how you reconciled this way of thinking versus what you were taught before. Now, I want to give you a little bit of context here. I record videos with people that have had near-death experiences. I put them on YouTube. And I get all these people saying, well, that's not biblical. That couldn't possibly have happened. He didn't see Jesus. That's not biblical. Reincarnation can't possibly be true. All these things. So how did you reconcile this with what you believed before?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you what, my entire foundation completely crumbled beneath my feet and I just let it go, because I believed, number one, and actually it's really apropos that I shared the story about my minister basically, you know, defiling all the girls in my class. I mean, I think he had sex with 8 or 10 of us in that class. But he taught me the 10 commandments. He taught me my beliefs. I mean, I'm getting chills because I believed him. I looked up to him. He was the foundation. Like, he's the one that built the foundation of what I believed in my life. And so for him to have been a human and have done things that I felt were not in alignment with the Bible, when I found this out in college, I mean, I didn't find out for a few years after it all happened. And my mother called me, I remember, freshman year in college. And, you know, we didn't have cell phones back then. I mean, it was a phone, you know, on the wall. And it was like, oh my God, did Pastor Peter ever touch you? Because he's just admitted. And I totally deny. I said, that's not true. He didn't do that. Like, I was defending him originally because I believed in him so much. So that was the first kind of crumbling of my foundation, but I still believed in God. I still like was like, okay, that was just him. But I did step away for a long time. And then when we had children, Ian and I got married and we had 2 children, I became an Episcopalian and started teaching Sunday school. And then that's when he got, you know, when he was dying, and that community was so wonderful and so supportive. But the night that he died, and I saw that, you know, there's just a direct connection. We don't need this middleman kind of thing. I really was able to just let it go. And it's only been recently, actually within the last 6 or 8 months, in fact, that I've picked the Bible up again, and I'm finding some nuggets of gold in there, but I'm also not going to use it as, for me, the foundation of any belief system I have. I mean, I think it's a great, what would you call it? Like a guidebook, but you know, there's some things in there. I mean, I do not believe that our God is a damning brim and fire. What's that? Fire and brimstone kind of being. I mean, I just don't. I think he's all pure love. And so anything in the Bible that's him damning people or this is the, I mean, I just can't, I won't, I don't believe that.
No, I understand. I, you know, I, I try to, I'm very cautious when I talk about religion because I don't want to take anything away from anyone.
I know, exactly. I know. And I, so I apologize to anybody if I've offended you, but these are my beliefs. So
No, I think what you said was fine. But I think of religion as kind of like training wheels. You know, it's a great way for some of us, I guess, to get started. But I'm actually putting together some classes right now. And the thing I always say is like, why believe when you can know? You know, we have these resources available to us now. You know, I can talk to someone who's had a shared death experience. I can talk to someone who's had a near-death experience. I can talk to people who have been on the other side. The Bible's really cool. And I believe that Paul had a near-death experience when he talked about on the road to Damascus. To me, that sounds like a near-death experience. I believe he had an out-of-body experience when he was praying. So if he could do that 2,000 years ago, why can't Lisa do it now?
Yeah, I love that. And I love the training wheel aspect because I do believe that we come here without any memory whatsoever. I mean, that's the whole premise is that we've agreed to come down here and to experience the physical life, physical beings, being a physical being. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. For me, like I said, I think there's some nuggets of gold in there. And I think there's some, but it's almost like that game of telephone, you know, where you start saying, you know, you start in a circle and the way it's been translated so many different times in so many different languages. And, you know, especially now after we've lived through what we've lived through the last couple of years, the amount of, what do you want to call it? Propaganda for whatever it is. I mean, they've taken all the women out of the Bible for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, that's to me right there alone is like what the credibility makes it difficult for me to buy into when, you know, it's been tampered with for various reasons. And again, for those of you that love the Bible and live your life by the Bible, fabulous. That's wonderful. I think everyone should do what feels good to them. But for me, yeah, it's kind of like,
yeah, I think everyone should do what feels good to them as long as it makes them a better person, you know, and the thing is,
they're not like judging others for them not doing what they're doing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, I'm glad we had that conversation because I think that's really interesting, you know, for this. I went through a deconstruction because I couldn't believe that God was this damning God and sending people to hell. It just made no sense to me. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember several times as I was going through it, it's scary. You know, you mentioned the foundation crumbling and you feel like your whole world is falling apart. This is what you believed your whole life. And if this isn't true, then what else isn't true? Yeah. But I want to encourage people that, you know, God doesn't fear your questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, again, after these last couple of years too, I mean, I've had another deconstruction of what, you know, what is truth? I mean, you know, like if five people watch a car accident happen, every single person has a different viewpoint of what happened. And so what is the truth? You know, I mean, I think that's what it comes down to. And I love the idea that, you know, we're all our individual beings with our own experience, but yet ultimately we're all one. And so we are creating the experience that, you know, that other people are having. And I don't know. I mean, it gets so crazy. I think that's the other thing. We don't know. I mean, that's the other thing. If people are like, this is the way it is, and I know this is the truth, then I'm like, yeah, no. Like anybody that is 100% certain about anything for me, I mean, it's hard to buy that for me. I mean, because we're always learning new things. Like right now, even like science, but believe the science. Well, tomorrow the science is different because they did a new experiment and now the science has changed. So I don't understand like where do you draw the line of like, okay, we're not going to keep learning or uncovering new and amazing things. I mean, now they've proven, like, what do they call it? The DNA, the God gene or something, like they're getting close. Spirituality and religion is getting, spirituality and science are getting closer and closer because, you know, but there's still stuff we're never going to understand.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. I'm my background's engineering. So and your background's accounting. So we're analytical kind of people. So I like that, the analytical part of it. And I do think that science and faith or spirituality are kind of dovetailing together. And we're starting to understand that consciousness is really at the base of everything. So I love the fact that, you know, you're sharing these experiences and that you were open to, okay, we change based on evidence, right? We see evidence that Ian's fine. And that makes sense. I think that speaks to our heart. I think, you know, it's interesting. I talked to so many people who are still in that. And, you know, quick story, I was sitting with a couple of pastors one day and we were talking about the concept of hell. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I said, how do you believe that all these people around us are going to go to hell? That every, you know, pretty much everybody here is going to go to hell. And how do you sit here and have lunch? I don't understand it. But, you know, I think our heart tells us that's wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know how big groups of people can just basically damn all the other groups of people that don't believe. I mean, that to me is just not in my heart. Like, yeah. I'm all about, you know, everybody is worthy of love. And so, yeah.
And that's what people that have had NDEs tell us, you know, that's the almost universal message that comes back from NDEs, yeah, is that we're all worthy. We're all one, and all the things that you're saying. So I know when you were on before, we talked about this incredible experience you had with the shared death experience with your husband, but you had Tuxedo just recently. And I understand he came to you the night that he died.
Yes, he did. And I think I touched on it a little bit earlier, but yeah, he just, you know, I was just right in that twilight zone of falling asleep, and the energy just washed over me. And I kept thinking of like it was like lace. I was trying to think of what tangible, I think that's part of it. It's so difficult to find words for the things that we're experiencing that are not of this world. But it was almost like lace. But then later I thought, no, it was almost like a snowflake. Cause if you've ever seen a snowflake, you know, blown up under a microscope, it's just so intricate and delicate and, again, that pristine and just, oh my God, it was beautiful. So, and now the best thing is he can speak English to me, because animal communication has never been one of my strong suits in this experience in this go around of my life. But now, like, I have a convertible, so all of a sudden, he'll be like, Mom, look at me. I'm riding with my head above the windshield, you know, with my paws up there. And I'm like, I don't see him, but I hear him say these things. And I'm like, well, maybe I'm just crazy. I don't know. But it's so fun because I can feel his energy. I can feel the presence of him there and the playfulness and the freedom that he now has, because he had gotten so old and he had so much arthritis. It was hard for him to walk around. So I was carrying him down at the beach every day. And so, yeah. So, and I have my freedom now. We were also chatting earlier. Like, I mean, I've been a caregiver for such a long time between my husband's illness and death, and then raising my two children. And then, I mean, my kids, you know, left and went off to college, and they're now in their late 20s, but I had Tuxedo still. So I, you know, it was like this kind of cascading role that I've played in my life. And now really for the first time I'm free, and I'm still kind of like, oh, now what?
Yeah. Well, it's on for new phase.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
So you've had a couple really interesting experiences with some people that we know, we've heard of. So tell me about your experience with Ram Dass.
Oh my gosh. Ram Dass. He's such a love. And I'd heard of him. I'd never read any of his books. And actually I have not read any books since I've even met him, but I moved here. I'm in my sixth summer here now. And within the first week or so of arriving here, I met a gentleman who was a part of his inner circle. And I said, well, gosh, I'd love to, you know, meet him someday or whatever. And he said, oh, well, there's actually an event happening. It's a fundraiser. And there's an extra ticket I just heard, you know, if you're interested. And I said, absolutely. Well, it turns out it was Ram Dass's personal assistant's extra ticket. So I was sitting next to Ram Dass during this 3-hour event at it was called the Maui Arts and Cultural Center. And this was back in February of 2017. So that was my first connection with him. And literally all these people that have been hanging around Ram Dass for 30 plus years are looking at me like, who's the new girl? Like, where did she come from? But for whatever reason, Ram Dass and I just kept running into each other. And I have a beautiful photo of us down at the beach, because he would swim every Monday morning. And so I was invited to go hang out with the crew and swim with him. And he had had a stroke, so he needed a lot of extra care, and getting him into the water, you know, took some extra energy. So then over the last, he died in 2019. So during that time, I guess it was, just over two years, going on 3 years. Mm-hmm. I just kept getting into these inner circle situations. His caregiver and I took hospice training together. So then I was invited to this event at Ram Dass's house where we were tying Maharishi. That was his Indian, guru, some of his blanket onto these little bracelets for Ram Dass's next event. And, while we were there, Ram came out and gifted each one of us. There was maybe only eight people there. So he and I locked eyes and just, So the night, the day that he passed, it was actually December 22nd, 2019. Interesting. Both my husband died on February 22nd and Ram died on, December 22nd. All of a sudden I had a nap again, not a normal thing for me, but I remember that day I had laid down. And when I got up from my nap, I was standing next to my bed and it was almost like somebody pushed me. I fell onto my bed and I turned around. I said, Ram Dass, what are you doing? I mean, it just, again, burst out of my mouth, kind of like me asking about you washing your face or saying that. And I didn't think about it, but an hour later I get a text and it said Ram Dass had passed away. And I'm like, oh my God, he did a drive-by. Wow. And literally pushed me off my feet when he left the next day. So that was on the 23rd, I had gone for a chiropractic visit and I was laying on the table waiting for the chiropractor. And all of a sudden Ram Dass's energy was just hovering right above me. And in my mind, I said, Ram, what are you doing? Go to the light, go to the light. Lisa, you are the light. And then his energy just floated down on top of me, just like a beautiful blanket, just so loving and so kind. And then I was invited to his home on Christmas Day to sit in, in reverence of his body being laid out there. So I got to sit with his body. I went over and I placed my hands on top of his hands that were on his heart. And as soon as I did that, I closed my eyes and he just took me out into the stars and took me just on this beautiful, my whole body is chilling, which always mm-hmm. means truth to me. Mm-hmm. Just out into the stars, out into the universe. And just, we were just, I don't know, we just went together. And since then I have a couple pictures of him in my home and, he just comes to me and gives me love and encouragement. And he's just having so much fun. He's so thrilled to be out of his physical body that kept him so, tethered to not being able to move much here on this land. But.
And I understand you had an experience with Robin Williams.
Oh my gosh, Robin Williams. And this is powerful. This was, he came to me soon after, he had passed and he had committed suicide, which was a huge, situation for a lot of people to, accept that because he was such a happy, he was a funny guy and everything, but he did suffer from depression. And I guess there was, he was fighting some other medical issues near the end. So what he told me, and I feel like I've shared this with many people that have experienced suicide in their family, that, and it's been helpful to them. But so Robin said, I want to explain suicide in our society has such a negative connotation because it's almost like, oh, the person was weak-willed or they didn't have the help they needed and family thinks, oh, if I was only there and could have helped them. He said, let me explain it like this. When somebody has cancer, we don't, shame them about how they die. We don't say, oh my gosh, if they had only, fought harder or, whatever. It's like their physical body shuts down and that's then what ends their life. Mm-hmm. And he said, Lisa, I was in such torment. My mental body died in my being. Mm-hmm. The only way that a mental body can then release itself from the physical body is to have the physical body end its life. Mm-hmm. And again, I've got chills as I'm saying this. And again, I'm not going to say this is the truth for all suicide people, mm-hmm. but this is what Robin Williams shared with me. And many people have said it's been helpful to understand this in a new way that they didn't kill themselves because they couldn't go on or they, were weak-willed or, they were it's literally that they, another aspect of their body had died. Mm-hmm. And the only way to release that then was to take their own physical body. And, it's been amazing to me to get that new understanding, because I used to have a lot of judgment. I had two of my son's best friends, one of the mothers and the other friend's dads, they both killed themselves the senior year of my son's experience. And I was very judgmental about them. Like, oh my gosh, how selfish of them. Like, they're not, you know, they don't care about the people that are here. And actually one of the dads came to me through a channeling session. And I mean, he was definitely confused and didn't realize the impact it would have. But at the same time, it makes sense to me that what Robin Williams said is that he was so debilitated by the loss of his mental body that he couldn't carry on. Yeah. In the physical.
Yeah. I'm glad you shared that. I think that's a really good message, because suicide has got, it's so tough in so many ways.
It is.
You know, as you said, we blame ourselves as survivors. I should have known, I should have been able to stop them.
Yeah.
We judge the person that has taken their life, as you said, as being weak. Some faith traditions teach that if you take your own life, that you're going to go to hell. So not only were you tormented here, but you're going to be tormented for eternity for not being able to handle it. And that perspective is one I'm sure is going to bring a lot of people comfort.
Yeah, I believe so too. And again, we would never do that to somebody that died of cancer or were in a car accident, or, you know, like shame them or blame them. I mean, I'm sure people do think, well, if we'd only done a different round of chemo or this or that. I mean, I think it does happen, but somehow suicide has really got, you know, it's just such a stigma for the family.
We don't put that blame on the person who's lost their life, the person who's taken their life.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It was Ann Haich. I saw an article, I think it was yesterday, about Ann Haich and, you know, what she had done, and, you know, people were judging her. She burned down some other woman's house. Why would she's, you know, what a terrible thing to do. Well, you know, addiction is not something that people choose. You know, it's a mental issue. It's a mental health issue. So, but we so much judge mental health issues. And as you said, we've got multiple bodies, the physical body, the mental body, the spiritual body. I don't even know the number of bodies we have. Multiple.
Absolutely.
And they can become damaged, you know, so that makes sense.
Yeah. And he has come to me too. We did a really fun thing. It was called Maui Channel 5. We had 5 channelers and we had got up and we did a celebrity night. And so Robin Williams came to me that night too. And oh my gosh, I just let him take over my body. And we were just, oh my gosh, it was so much fun. In fact, I'm having lunch with a friend later today and we're going to talk about doing another and hopefully getting it on video this time.
Oh, wow. That sounds cool. You have to let me know about that.
Yeah,
so I want to shift gears a little bit, because I saw some of your adventures in Egypt that you had taken the trip there. I saw some pictures, but I understand you had some pretty interesting spiritual experiences there as well.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, I was in Egypt in November of 2021, and I had no idea that I would be going to Egypt at the end of 2021. I had done a guided meditation with somebody. It must have been end of September. And during the meditation, and again, these are things like, I don't know that these things are going to happen, but all of a sudden goddess Isis just shows up. And again, I'm not a very visual person. When I do meditation, it's very just, I don't get visuals. It's usually just darkness and just kind of a knowing, but this one, goddess Isis just came up. She had a staff in one hand and she had her crown on and this beautiful gown, and just, she's like, I am Isis, I am with you now. And I'm like, holy cow, okay, I don't know what that means, but thank you. So that happened like on a Monday. Well, then Wednesday I went with a friend up to Ia Valley here in Maui, and it's got this beautiful river. So we were sitting in the river and I said, hey, let's play a game where we say, remember when, and you imagine that a year has passed and that we're reflecting back on, you know, fun things that we wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a way to bring things into your life. So we're playing and she says, remember when we went to Egypt and, you know, we went on the Nile and we did this and we did that. I'm like, oh my gosh, yes. And remember when? And so we just kind of played that game talking about Egypt. Well, when we were done, I said, I don't know why or what about Egypt, but I have to go to Egypt. And she's like, oh, well, the reason I said that is I've got a couple of friends going and maybe you could go with them. And I'm like, yes, that sounds great. Put me in touch with them. So I was on a Wednesday, and then Friday she put me in touch with them and they said, yeah, we'd love to have you join us. We're taking a very small group and it'd be great if you could have someone, you know, be a roommate to save some money. So I reached out to my son who had always wanted to go to Egypt when he was little. And it just happened that he was in between jobs and moving and his passport was good for 8 extra months. It was a 10-year passport, was going to expire in 8 months, but it needed to be good for 6 months. So he was right in the window.
Wow.
So he and I went for 2 months. For 2 weeks. And I guess it was just over 2 weeks, but it was phenomenal. And it was during the height of, you know, COVID and all that. And we were 7 people on our trip, got it out of 20. But we were testing every other day. And wow. So we were totally fine. Well, then we went, I can't remember what city we were on, the Nile doing a cruise. I mean, it was phenomenal. So one of the things that happened was I saw this ring in the window. So it's a golden ankh. And I just had to have it. I'm like, oh my God, I have to have that ring. So then I'll come back because a couple things happened in Egypt. But then when I got back home a week after I arrived, I got woken up by ISIS. And she said, go to your Hay House app and search for ISIS. There's a chapter and listen to it. I'm like, okay. So I go and sure enough, there was a book called You Are the Goddess. And there was a chapter called ISIS. And so I'm listening. And basically it says, you have been to Egypt. You have been to my temple, which I was, and you have received the golden ankh. You are now my initiate.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what? This is crazy.
Wow.
So anyway, that's still unfolding. I'm still trying to like, what does that mean? But isn't that, I mean, like, first of all, that was one of the weirdest things I've ever woken up to, which was, you know, go to your Hay House app and talk about specifics. When I was in Egypt, we'd gone to the museum and there was King Tut's. It was like a golden breast shield. And I walked up to it, just, you know, kind of looking around. Da, 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 and I looked at that and just immediately it was like a movie played in my mind. And I was one of his concubines. He died at 18. He was very young. And I had just found out he had died and we were truly in love. And I just started sobbing right there in the middle of the museum. And this whole thing just, just played. And I have never experienced anything like that before, you know, in my awake state and just all of a sudden just like having a dream happening right there. And it happened 2 more times. We were on the Nile River on the cruise and I looked over and on the hillside, I could see myself as like an 8-year-old child just running along and looking at the boats and wishing that I was on a boat. And my dad was a baker and I was a girl and I was like really envious of the boys because the boys were able to go on the river boats and things and I just couldn't. So yeah, it was the most spiritually amazing trip I've ever, I've never had, I guess one time in Rome, I had a few things like that, but not nearly as potent.
Interesting.
As Egypt. Yeah.
So had you been attracted to Egypt before or Egyptian
never.
Culture or anything?
Like literally from that moment ISIS arrived. I mean, it had never even crossed my mind of ever wanting to go to Egypt, not only not wanting to go, but like almost I'd never go there. And then hearing about Egypt and then, oh, and it turns out, I mean, ISIS is she's the queen of Egypt. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about ISIS. And so since learning, I mean, we went to her temple. I mean, I was just ISIS obsessed when I was in, in Egypt and just, she was showing up everywhere. But interestingly, again, you know, they named that the Taliban or whatever ISIS, used like, what is the word? I want to say ancient spiritual, but you know, like really powerful, like ISIS, the one, the goddess, they used her name to name a really awful group of people that have tortured and hurt many, many people. And so that's the thing is our society will use sacred words and sacred symbols and names to defile them. Like, because when I've said like, oh yeah, ISIS, and they're all like, oh, you mean the Taliban group? I'm like, no, goddess ISIS. Like, so for me now, it's hard to even think of the Taliban group because I'm so like, you know.
Well, I'm not sure how that name came about because other people around the world, some people call them ISIL, I-S-I-L.
Oh, yes.
So it's for something for Islamic State. So I think it's America where we started calling it ISIS. Yeah, well, okay. I'm not 100% sure about that. But
because it's funny you say that. I remember hearing somebody say ISIL and I was like, what? What is it's ISIS. Like what?
Yeah.
But that was years ago when it was happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there is some association with that name and with, you know, that. And it's fortunate to tie that in there.
Well, you know, I find it interesting because I know several people who channel, and you channel, as you alluded to several times when we're talking. And one of the people I know, like, she said she met Thor. And we're like, well, Thor's a myth, right? You couldn't meet Thor. And so we don't – these archetypes, you know, apparently they do exist in some form or another.
Yes, I think so. I know I was channeling for my brother. This was years ago. And oh my God, it was something from, what was the Tom Hanks movie with the Toy Story. And it, I forget who was in there. Something with a Z, Zelfs. I don't know. Anyway, it was basically the, something in there that I was, and I'm like, this just doesn't make sense because this is from Toy Story. Like, why am I? But you know what I think it is? I mean, for me is, and it's kind of coming through right now, is that because there's this collective consciousness, you know, and I put it up there, I do believe that we as human beings are able to pick things from there and then we create, you know, storylines and use these names and use these, you know, archetypes because they're in existence out there and potentially in reality in another form,
right.
But we're able to gather those names and some of the ideas and then create stories down here. And that's why it's kind of interesting. Like I see, you know, like even in Hollywood, think of all of the blockbuster movies where, you know, towers are falling and burning and, you know, and then we had 9/11. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, everything is already out there. I mean, that's, I don't know if you've ever heard that idea before too, that like everything that ever was and everything that ever is already done. And it's just a matter of lining up those timelines to experience, you know, those different things.
So, yeah. And I believe a lot of the things that people write, that we create is channeled. I truly believe that, you know, musicians, I think people that write stories, write movies, et cetera, they're channeling. These things are coming from spirit. And so when we people might dismiss it and say, well, that's a myth that that the Egyptians made up, or that's a myth that the Norwegians made up, or, you know, maybe it's because they were in contact with something, some aspect of consciousness, because everything is consciousness.
Absolutely.
That has these attributes that we admire. Angels. I know a lot of people think angels are myths, but I know a lot of people believe truly. And I've heard, you know, it's interesting because I've heard the angels aren't necessarily individuals. They're kind of like collectives. Mm-hmm. And they're so close together that they go by a singular name, which is an interesting concept.
I love that. Well, that's like my beings of love and light. You know, I mean, for the longest time, I'm like, who are you? Like, give me a name. And they're like, no, because you humans are so caught up on titles and labels that then you're going to make it like, we don't want to give you a label that then you're going to, it defines it. We're like, we're undefinable. So they finally said, we're beings of love and light. And I'm like, okay, well, that's still not like Abraham or
really.
You know, like I like Seth or like, just give me a name. But they just said, no, like, if you want to call us anything, you can call us that. And truly, I mean, I believe there's angels for everything. I mean, even like putting a necklace on, if I'm like, angels, please help me. Boom, it's done. Yeah. You know, oh, I want a parking spot. Boom, it's right there. But again, you got to believe, you got to say thank you. You got to ask.
Yeah.
But I've also had angels, I mean, completely. Oh my God. I mean, a couple of years ago, I was driving a car up a road and a truck blew through a stop sign. Like, and I was like, oh my God, I'm done. Like, I literally was like, there's no way this is not going to hit me. Mm-hmm. And I slammed on my brake, but I swear to you, it looked like the front of my car. It was like Roger Rabbit. It just like, it was like an accordion. It just like, it was like, it was rubber. Just whoop. It pulled right up against me. The car, the truck went by me and then it, you know, straightened out again. And it was like, I felt like I was in a cartoon. It just, how did that happen?
Yeah.
But I do believe, again, when you're open to any possibility that, I mean, we are, this is all just, you know, molecules just in form. And so if in that moment, the angels, you know, helped me and just created my little cartoon car to save me, because I mean, it was, there was no way. I'm like this giant, you know, four-wheel drive truck going 50 miles an hour, and it was just gonna just
you know, as you told that, it reminded me of one time I was pulling out of my neighborhood and I wasn't paying attention. I pulled out in front of someone coming and we were gonna have an accident at a 90 degree angle, and I just knew that she was going to hit me, and she knew she was gonna hit me, but somehow we never collided. And it was so, she was so convinced that we had hit, she got out of her car and looked at her bumper, but we never touched.
My gosh.
So I'm like, what happened? I don't know what happened. I just know that there was no damage, neither one of us, but we both knew that we had hit.
Yeah. Well, I had an experience like that too. I was in a roundabout. It was a two lane roundabout. And I know, because I was trying to get off and I didn't see this car next to me. And I mean, I felt her hit my car. But she ended up going off in another direction. I pulled over and got out and looked at my car, and there was not a scratch. Yeah. There was not anything. I'm like, what? How? What? That's crazy.
Yeah. So Lisa, we're coming to the end of our time. So tell me what it is. What are you doing now? Are you channeling, or what are you doing?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. I mean, as I said, I'm kind of finding my new way here. I'm working on defining what it is I do, because I don't like the word channel. I don't like the word medium. I mean, again, the labels that our society puts on things. So I loved it. I was talking with someone recently and it said, wow, it sounds like, Lisa, like you're an ordinary person that has extraordinary experiences. And I said, I love that. I think that is exactly along the lines of what I'm going to start, trying to explain or to, you know, to help people, because I don't want anyone to think that I have any kind of special powers or things that, I mean, everybody has this opportunity to connect in and to, you know, I love to teach automatic handwriting so people can, you know, communicate with whatever is beyond us. And, you know, and that's my little PALS method, PALS, prepare, ask, listen, and say thank you. And, you know, and it's pretty straightforward. And that's how I got started in this. Once my husband got sick, I learned how to do automatic handwriting with the angels, and that kind of started opening the door. And then again, it was kind of the crescendo was the night he died, and got to be, you know, go to the other side. So what am I doing? I'm on Facebook. That's really the only place I'm on right now, which actually I just took my app off my phone, so I don't know what I'm doing, but it's Love from Lisa Jones. I've done some meditations, which are free. I should put those back up there. But yeah, I'm figuring it out. I'm getting reorganized.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we have seasons of our life, right? And we tend to rush from one to the other.
Right.
So take some time and figure out, you know, what it is that you want to do in your next season. I think it's
that's
great
right.
Thing.
That's definitely, it's a new season for me. Thank you. That's what it feels like. So, and I'm really enjoying just my downtime and not having to rush home to my dog. You know, I'm still, my nervous system is still unwinding, because I'll be out and all of a sudden like, oh my gosh, I need to go. And then it's like, nope, you can actually eat at the restaurant today. You don't need to rush home and, you know, and make sure that Tux is okay. So he's always with me now. So.
Yeah. That's the thing. Now that he's always with you.
I know.
I tell people the same thing about my daughter. It's like, you know, when they're in the physical, they can only be with you when they're with you, but now they can always be with you.
That's right. I know. And there is, I mean, as hard as it is not to have them in the physical, there's something about having them with you all the time, which is also really magical.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, great getting to see you again.
It's been
wonderful. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you too. Have a wonderful rest of your evening.
Thanks for listening to Grief to Growth. Brian hopes that you find this episode helpful and will come back for future episodes. Brian's best-selling book, Grief to Growth, Planted, Not Buried, is a great resource for anyone who is coping with grief or knows someone who is. If you enjoy the podcast and would like to support it, there are three things you can do to help. The first is to share the podcast with someone that you think it will help. The second is to go to iTunes, rate, and review the episode. The third way you can support the podcast is by becoming a patron. Head over to www.patreon.com/grief2growth. That's patreon.com/grief, the number 2, growth, and sign up to make a small monthly donation. Patrons get access to exclusive bonus content and knowledge that you are helping to spread the message of grief to growth. For more about Brian and Grief to Growth, visit www.grief2growth.com.
Hey there, if you liked this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you liked. If you didn't like this episode, come on over and talk about it. Let me know what you didn't like. Go to grieftogrowth.com/community and look for Talk About the Podcast. I'll see you there.